From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Today's topic is orchids, but not the ones you might be growing as a flowering houseplant. Our subject is native terrestrial types that are more often than not under great pressure in the wild, their numbers dwindling. Now, thanks to work led by Peter Zale at Longwood Gardens, strategies have been developed for propagating one such orchid, the Kentucky Lady Slipper, and that Cypripedium and Dr. Zale will travel to the upcoming Chelsea Flower Show in England, where they'll be part of an international display showcasing efforts in orchid conservation. So more in a moment, but first, these messages.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners at wholesale prices. On the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, offering 30 new seed varieties for 2024. Professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
Dr. Peter Zale is Associate Director of Conservation, Horticulture, and Plant Breeding at Longwood Gardens, where he leads a team of scientists and horticulturists focused on conservation, horticulture, plant exploration, breeding, and more. He has a long time, a special passion for and focus on native orchids of the United States, which is our subject today. And I'm so glad to speak to him. Welcome, Peter. Thank you for making time.
Thanks for having me, Margaret. It's a pleasure to be talking with you.
Yeah. So orchids, the most diverse of plant families on the planet, I think, but so many of them are in trouble. And so give us a little sort of, you know, background of sort of the numbers and the situation of orchids, you know, how many U.S. species and how many worldwide and things like that.
Sure. So I think one of the reasons that orchids are so engaging is because there are so many of them. And I think scientists would argue about this, but there's about 24,000 to 30,000 or more worldwide. And so if you think about all of the plants on the planet, that's about 8 to 10% of all the plants on the planet. And so it's pretty incredible. So I think the only other family that really challenges the orchids would be the aster family. And here in North America, we have about 220 types of orchids north of Mexico. And a lot of those are in Florida, but many of them are found throughout the temperate and colder parts of the United States. And for example, here in Pennsylvania, at least historically, we used to have about 60 different taxa or types of orchids.
And interesting. Wow.
Yeah. And the thing about orchids is that even though they're widespread, they're on every continent except Antarctica, almost everywhere they occur, they're not ultra common. And many of them are really quite rare. And it's estimated that about half of the world's orchids are vulnerable or threatened or endangered in some way. And that's the case right here in Pennsylvania as well. And throughout a lot of the United States, that our orchids are rare and declining in numbers.
Right. And so I mentioned in the introduction that we're going to talk about terrestrial species, and there's also epiphytic orchids, a different group of orchids that I'm just going to overgeneralize and say live in the trees.
Right.
And those are under pressure for a different reason in different regions of the world. Yes. I mean, that's
right.
Yeah.
I think most people, when they think of orchids, that's what they're thinking of, you know, tropical epiphytic orchids like you might see in southern Florida or around the tropics. Certainly, we don't have any of those here in Pennsylvania. Or in the mid-Atlantic, you know, all of the orchids we have here are terrestrial.
Right. So you're heading to Chelsea to the flower show later this month. And when your Longwood colleague contacted me the other day to tell me about you and the Kentucky Lady Slipper, Cypripedium Kentuckiens, making this trip, she referred to it as a Cinderella story. It was very cute. She made me laugh. And she said, because like the classic fairy tale, the Chelsea show is like a grand ball of sorts, you know, and your plant has the word slipper in its name. And this orchid story is one of transformation, sort of against all odds success. So tell us briefly about how this orchid that's under so much pressure in its native range in the southeast, is headed to the Chelsea Flower Show, and what hopefully that says about its future.
Well, it's a very interesting case in that, there's probably an estimated 5,000 or fewer plants left in the wild. And when we started working on orchid conservation at Longwood, we specifically wanted to look at how to propagate them, how to grow them from seed. And there's a lot that goes into that. Orchids have these tiny dust-like seeds. They often need to be grown in a laboratory, that sort of thing. And it just so happened that we had an opportunity to work with a local population of our yellow lady slipper. And we also were able to work with some cultivated Kentucky lady slipper. And so we used those two species really as a model to figure out our propagation protocols. And it just so happened that even though Cypripedium kentuckiense is so rare in the wild, it turns out that it's using the methodology that we did, very easy to propagate and really quite easy to grow. In fact, it's even easier to grow than the large yellow lady slipper, which is native just a few miles from Longwood here. And so it's really interesting where you have this plant that's really rare in the wild, but seems really adaptable to cultivation. And so some of the plants that we were able to propagate, which are now 8 or 9 years old, are growing in the gardens. We're growing them in our research nursery, and we had the opportunity to join this team of orchid experts from around the United States and around the world, and showcase some of the orchids that we've grown, or some of the Cypripediums we've grown at Chelsea as part of a display.
And I think I read that you've grown, you successfully have said grown hundreds of seedlings, I guess. I don't know how many, but you've even sent hundreds back to the U.S. Forest Service to help in conservation plantings. And aren't a number of them or one of them going to be in the collection of the Royal Botanic Gardens at Kew and so forth as well?
Exactly. And so it turns out we adapted a method of seed propagation that actually Kew Gardens worked on in the 80s and the 90s. And we've been very successful with the Kentucky lady slipper and have been able to propagate many hundreds, if not thousands, of them. And so, yes, some of them have gone to the Forest Service. We have other projects where we will propagate them. We'll keep part of them for our living collections and then send them back for restoration purposes as well. And yes, it's one of the great things about this is that once the display is over, it's very likely that the plants, the Cypripedium kentuckiense plants, will go into the living collection at Kew Gardens.
So yeah, that must feel, I mean, obviously the conservation work is the end game here, but that must feel like a special other, a little something extra.
It does. It does. And I, one of the aspects of my job and, helping develop plant collections and things like that, I mean, it's really a great conduit for sharing with other gardens, sharing messages. And, just I think, you gardeners will often say, the best way to keep a plant is to give it away, right? And I, that's really something that I always think about when we're propagating these rare plants. I mean, if we're able to have success, it's important to have them here at Longwood for restoration, but also to get them into the hands of other experts, other gardens that can keep them going as well.
You were talking about seed, growing them from seed, and I think, and some of what I've read, it sounded about some of the native orchids sounded almost counterintuitive, like that. I don't know, that mature seed sometimes fails to germinate, or you have to go to all kinds of, with again, not necessarily with this specific species, but it's not like, okay, the seed ripens and I sow it and boom, I've got orchids. I mean,
Right. I wish it were that easy, but
tomatoes it ain't, huh?
no, definitely not. And so, orchids with these tiny dust-like seeds, they in the wild not only need to fall into the right place, but the right fungi or mycorrhizae in the soil need to be there and infect the seed. And basically, the orchid seedling germinates and uses the fungus as a food source as it's maturing. And so in our lab, we actually can mimic that process using fungi, or with the lady slippers, we use a nutrient-rich sterile medium that's specifically for Cypripediums and other types of slipper orchids. And with the slipper orchids, what we found was, and using information from Kew, is that if you harvest the seeds at about 50 days after pollination, rather than when they're physiologically mature at about 100 days after pollination, they actually germinate a lot better, like way better. You know,
Oh.
80 or 90% will germinate, as opposed to if you collect the mature seed. It's kind of a crapshoot. You don't really know what you're going to get. It could be 10%, it could be 60%, and it can change from year to year and between different populations. So it really takes a lot of work. But using the immature seeds, we have been able to routinely propagate many different types of lady slippers here at Longwood, but also take that knowledge and apply it to other native orchids as well that have been really difficult or even impossible to propagate.
Huh. So you said other lady slippers, and the Cypripediums are, they're distinctive looking flowers, and so the slipper in their common name, I guess, speaks to that. It's, this like pouch like this, I don't know, modified, what is it, fused petals down below, kind of, that form this like lip or pouch or
Yeah,
something.
so the labellum forms the pouch, and it's really meant to, it's giving all the indicators to a pollinator that it has a nectar reward, right? But it's like so many of our other native orchids where they have deceptive pollination, right? So a bee or a surfeit fly, lands inside the pouch. There's these little, often red stripes or sort of differently colored stripes, sort of like the lights along a runway when you're landing, sort of inside of there that attract the pollinator. It lands in there, realizes that there's no nectar, no reward, gets irritated, and it can't fly out of there. So it sort of crawls up and comes into contact with the parts of the flower that enact pollination, and that's how it works. So it's a really fascinating pollination syndrome.
Yeah, because I mean they're very, very showy, just looking at them as a flower, and of course that's for a reason having nothing to do with human enjoyment, the
Right,
human
nothing at all.
aesthetic.
Yeah, nothing at
Yeah.
all. Yeah.
I think there's quite a few lady slipper orchid species in the US. What are there, like 10 or 12, or I don't know, how many are there, are the different Cypripediums
There
in the
are 10
US?
or 12, and
Yeah.
like so many orchids, their taxonomy is often disputed. But
Fluid, it's
yes,
fluid.
fluid, exactly. But yes, there's about 10 or 12, and there's a number of them here in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Do they hail from common types of environments? Are they all woodland plants, for instance? Can we say anything general about all of the lady slippers, or
Well, no. I mean, I guess you could say that they're woodland plants, but the one thing about finding them in the wild and where they grow, it's very hard to generalize their habitat. And I think that often they're associated with specific geologic features or physiographic provinces or things like that, rather than a particular ecosystem or habitat type. And so, for example, the Kentucky lady slipper is found in forested regions, but it often grows along seepage areas. So, like I know out in the western part of its range, it grows along areas where there's water seeping out, grows in that kind of habitat in Virginia. But then in the Cumberland Plateau, it grows on these sandy terraces above these fast-moving streams and these coves and hollers and hollows and things like that. So it can be hard to generalize. I mean, I guess they are woodland plants, but when you start to see them in the wild, it really it you get a lot more questions, I think, in the end than answers.
Right. I looked at the range maps, the BONAP range maps for the genus, Cypripedium, and it looked like there's some species most everywhere in the US, except for, I think, Nevada was like the one place where I didn't see any. And obviously those are not probably 100% up to date, or who knows. But and then there was one species, Parviflorum, that looked like it was so widespread. I mean, relatively. I mean, so some are just very, very, very limited to a small area, and some are wider spread and so forth. But there seemed to be a Cypripedium in most areas of the country.
Yeah, and looking at the yellow lady slipper, you know, we often talk about the large yellow, which is the one that we have in this part of Pennsylvania. The small yellow, yeah, they basically stretch from, you know, eastern Canada all the way across to Alaska, and then, you know, at many points south. So they're incredibly widespread, and there's actually a species in Europe and Russia and the Far East as well, a yellow lady slipper that has a similar range, although it's a different species. So it's interesting in orchids is that you can get these orchids that are very, very widespread, sort of generalists, and then you have things like the Kentucky lady slipper that is much more specialist in its habitat preferences.
And where is that? Where, I mean, it says Kentucky, but is that it's not just limited? It doesn't recognize the human boundaries, probably of the state of Kentucky. Where is it located?
It's got a very unusual sort of disjunct distribution, and so there's a population on the in Virginia, which is widely disjunct from sort of the core of the populations, which are in the Cumberland Plateau in Kentucky and Tennessee, maybe even down into Alabama. And then you have populations sort of scattered through Georgia, Alabama, East Texas, and the species actually has its stronghold in the Ouachita Mountains in Arkansas, in sort of west central Arkansas. So you almost could call it the Arkansas lady slipper, but it was first discovered from a population or described from a population in northeastern Kentucky. So that's where
I
the
see.
name is
That's
from.
how it got that name. Now, this is not the only native orchid by any means that you've been working on in the hopes of helping to restore wild populations. Are there others that that you want to just sort of call out and speak about a little bit, or
Well, we're working broadly within the genus Cypripedium, but we really want to develop a database for how to propagate all of the 150 or so terrestrial orchids that are native in in the United States. And so one genus of great interest that I think also has potential as a garden plant is the genus Platanthera. And these are often called fringed or bog orchids, and some of them are like Platanthera ciliaris are somewhat easy to propagate, and they have these incredible bright orange flowers that occur from, let's say, mid late July through August. There's some white flowered species, and then there's another group of Platantheras. There's one called the purple fringeless orchid, Platanthera paramina, and some related species, Platanthera grandiflora and Cycotes. And these are beautiful, kind of purple flowered orchids, and they can be 2 or 3 feet tall, and they have so much ornamental potential. You know, they're great plants as ecosystem indicators, but it turns out they're really, really hard to grow. So that's actually or propagate. And so that's actually one group where we've taken this idea of using the immature seeds, this sort of horticultural hack, and applying it to that. So we've done quite a bit of research on that. And I think orchids, our native orchids, are a great group of plants to really showcase the role of horticulture, that horticulture can play in plant conservation. And I feel like that's horticulture is an often underrepresented part of the plant conservation scheme.
So let's talk about that a little bit, because I mean, about growing or potentially growing orchids in our gardens, these terrestrial native orchids in our gardens. I have to confess, the only orchid I have in my garden is non-native and grows as a weed in my vegetable raised beds. You probably know what it is. How do you say it? Epipactus helleborine or something. Is that a word? Epipactus? Did I make
No,
that
that's it, Epipactus helleborine, which is probably, you know, most people, you know, I when I was a college student, I worked landscaping one summer, and I went to pull out weeds at this lady's yard. She's like, "I don't know what I have growing in my yard." And we showed up, and it was thousands of Epipactus helleborine, and that was an extreme case, but it's an interesting orchid that is basically spread from, you know, the eastern US all the way west, and you find it kind of everywhere, but it never makes carpets. It's not really super noxious, but it's fascinating. You know, we often think of orchids as rare plants, and here's one that is making its presence known well outside of its native range.
And I think it's not even from North America in the first place, right? It's from somewhere else, I
It's
think.
European, yeah. Yeah.
So I looked in my the flora, the current flora, the list of species known to be present in my county, which one of the conservation organizations in my area, nonprofit, keeps up to date and is very active, and we're very lucky. I'm in the Hudson Valley of of New York State in a county called Columbia County, adjacent to the Berkshires of Massachusetts. And they list 41 kinds of orchids that they know, you know, a location or multiple locations where they're present. And in some cases, these are, you know, like as varieties of a single species. So there's, you know, such and such variety, blah, blah, you know, it's not a distinct species, but a lot of orchids. And yet, what do I have? I have the Epibactis helleborine. I have this funny, boy, it's a tenacious thing. It really roots in. And it's charming. Yes. I mean, it has it, if you look at it closely, its tiny little flowers are beautiful, but it's not what I want in the vegetable beds necessarily.
No, and it's interesting is, you know, I've when I was younger, I tried to transplant it and it doesn't transplant, you know, so it's one of those things where it seems like, and maybe others have had different experience, but yeah, it's one of these things that is highly mycorrhizal. And if you try to move it, you know, the environmental conditions have to be just right. So it's interesting that it can be sort of such a generalist, but also be kind of particular.
Fussy, well. Right.
But that's pretty much sums up orchids. So, yeah.
So if we wanted to grow lady slipper, and as we I said, you know, I noticed on the range maps that there are many species around the country. So one could probably do the research and find out about the appropriate one or ones in your region. You spoke about some that are native, the yellow ones that are native in adjacent to where you are. What, because, you know, we were always thought, oh, they're so impossible. I can't grow. They're so hard. You know, they're so precious. They're so rare. What is the story about growing them in our gardens, do you think?
I mean, I think many orchids like lady slippers and some others as well make great garden plants. I think, you know, part of the difficulty has been in propagating them because it wasn't really until about, let's say, 25 or 30 years ago that anybody really figured out how to propagate a lot of our native orchids in larger numbers. And it takes a lot of time to get the first flower from something like the Kentucky lady slipper or yellow lady slipper. It takes, you have about 1 year in the lab and then another 3 to 5 years growing in a nursery or, you know, in another setting to get the first flower.
Mm-hmm.
And to get the, you know, nice big clump of them could be another 3 to 5 years. And so, you know, it takes a long time and, you know, it's, they don't really, I think, fit a lot of modern production cycles and they don't often do well under sort of the standard nursery conditions and things like that. So I think that's part of it as well.
So it's kind of like a disincentive for the commercial nursery people to propagate them, to give them space in their greenhouses or their cold frames or their whatever, their fields, because it's a long investment for before they get a return. Specialty people, some native plant specialists do have them, and some other specialists, our mutual friend Joni Evin at Plant Delights has some, you know, I mean, there are, I see them in catalogs and so forth. So and obviously we should always have to give that disclaimer. We must never wild collect anything. I mean, that would be absolutely against the law and ethically incorrect. So assuming they are an appropriate one is available, I mean, is there any trick to making them at home, the young plant at home, if we were able to buy it?
I think planting time is important. I think, you know, lady slippers have seasonal root growth. So if we're talking about lady slipper orchids, you know, planting them in the late winter is very good. A lot of times they're offered in the fall and that can work too, but they often sit there dormant. And, you know, so the planting time can really help, but also just recognizing where they want to grow. And I grow several lady slippers in my own garden and have for a long time now, and growing them, you know, in conditions that suit epimediums and polygonatums and hostas and astilbes and things like that are really what they're looking for. So the north side of your house, perhaps the east side of your house, works really well. You know, where they're protected by other plants, but not crowded either. And a lot of, you know, they like well-drained soil. Well, what does that mean? You know, I have well-drained soil at home. What I used to do when I first started growing these was sort of excavate a hole that's, say, I don't know, 6 inches deep and 12 to 15 inches wide. And then I filled it with that. I got some like builder sand, you know, some coarse sand and mixed a leaf mold in it and filled the hole with that and then planted the lady slipper there. And a lot of times, like if you buy a lady slipper, maybe it will come bare root, maybe it's in a pot, but their root system is very distinct and it really wants to spread out in where it's planted. And so I think making sure that you spread out the roots correctly and don't plant them too deep is really helpful as well. Keeping
Okay.
them mulched and keeping, making sure they don't frost heave and stuff like that. But it's an investment in time, and they're incredibly long lived. We have an accession of the large yellow lady slipper in the gardens here at Longwood that is a 1963 accession. So the same plants have been growing and, have been divided for the last 60 plus years. And I know that some lady slippers in the wild, they estimate that they can live for centuries. And so, if you get the conditions right, there's a potential that you have this really long-lived, really rewarding plant.
Right. So in the last minute or two, I'm just going to ask you, I said in the introduction that you, this is a orchids, native orchids have been a long fascination or passion of yours. Do you remember what your first orchid was?
I remember the first time I learned about native orchids, and I'll talk about that. When I was young, I became interested in trees at about age 14, and I would go to I was from Cleveland, I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, and my family would take me to the Holden Arboretum to study trees. And I remember walking through there, and they had a pamphlet with a line drawing of a yellow lady slipper on it, and I saw it, and I picked it up and started looking at it, and it just seemed like something clicked. I was like, oh my gosh, like it was my first, like orchids grow here. Like it was like a revelation. And from that time, I've been very interested in all kinds of orchids, but especially hardy orchids and native orchids and that kind of thing.
Well, it's really good to speak to you. I'm so glad we finally connected and that I could hear the story. And I hope you have a wonderful adventure, you and the orchids. I hope you have a wonderful adventure at the Chelsea Flower Show coming up at the end, toward the end of May. It sounds very exciting. And of course, the best part of all is that it's in the name of, an international showcasing an international effort toward orchid conservation. So thank you for making time today, Peter. It's wonderful to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. And thanks to all the rest of you for tuning in too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as at awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners at wholesale prices. On the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, offering 30 new seed varieties for 2024. Professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.